This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck wasn't his
Liz
name?
Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place de la Nación! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Thursday evening. This is a big bag of tricks, Scott Criscola. You never know what you're going to get nowadays with this podcast.
No, it's like a box of chocolates. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 370 of The Mothership. The weather is turning, JR.
Box of chocolates, like my three-year-old said, Princess Tiana is the chocolate princess. She's a... starting to recognize slightly about race, I guess.
I don't even know where to go with that.
We don't have to go anywhere with it.
Nope. Good enough.
Enjoy it. Yeah, we are here. Been a couple weeks on the schedule, and we'll see, mm-hmm. Scott. We'll, we're about a year and a half away from episode 400 now, but we might, we'll see if we can get things back on track soon. But for now, we're on this schedule here, and it's every other week. We're inside the Vintage Vault. And
yes.
How are you doing? It's been a while.
I am well. Good to talk to you, as always. Weather is fine, I guess, in Rhode Island. You are, a couple weeks into the arsonist hoop season? So,
Yeah, 4 weeks.
Seems like you guys are playing good games.
Yeah, 4 disappointing weeks. last night was a tough game. Last time I didn't enjoy that one. We took a bad loss, but anyway. It's been nice. Last night was the first time we played with good weather. The first few weeks it was
a little chilly.
Frigid. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I broke my pinky finger. I thought maybe I jammed it at first, but it still really hurts and it still swelled up a little.
You might have.
I think I got a
dislocation
hairline.
Or sprain. I don't know if you cracked it or not. I mean, it could be. Is it blue?
It was blue and purple for the first week.
Now it's gone. It's not broken. It would stay blue and purple, and it would hurt like a son of a bitch.
It does hurt like a son of a bitch.
Oh well.
And my other nail on my other pointer finger, on the other hand, keeps. It takes about a week to heal, and then it kind of pulls away while we play every week for some reason. So that takes like a week. So my hands have been useless, really, for the last 3 weeks or so. Everything I do is painful.
At least your son is still fairly light. So that's...
Yeah, my daughter's not, though, so that's going to be a little bit much.
So you had him up, Friday night during your...
Well, listen, he wasn't up before I get arrested for being a bad parent. He was not up till 2 in the morning, but he was with me watching the marathon Yankee Red Sox game.
Well, no, I'm saying, maybe he was having a tough night, crying a lot. I'm saying you kept him up. I'm saying maybe he
Forced him up till 2 a.m. That's what I did with Shane.
No,
I gave him Pepsi, made him stay awake.
Yes.
He was fussing a little bit early, so I figured I'll take him. And then,
right.
By the time we go to bed, the game will be over on 11, 11:30, whatever it was, we'll go up and go to bed, but ended up being like 2:30 by the time we made it back upstairs. Mm. But I didn't want to budge him, and it was good. He got a long sleep in, so it was nice because he was all cuddled up, and it permitted me from flipping out too hard for each of the things. I just had to sit there and
yes,
fist pump or punch the chair quietly.
Or be sullen. Yes, exactly. So yeah, we're a week into the season, into the baseball season. What, week and a half? Yankees are well. That division's pretty. Everybody's pretty much the same at this point right now. So really, not much to say there. Kind of happy the Mets are off to a decent start. Not better than I thought, but at least they're.
Yeah, it's funny because the Yankees. I mean, I don't think they'll be as bad as everyone says, but I've also.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, but I've also been. It's weird. It's usually baseball, I'm just all in immediately. But right now, with the whole Chris Dunn thing going on, I've been more into that. If he's going to come or go, come back or leave. And also Jets draft coming up, so it's a very important draft. So
yes,
I've been reading a ton about that. So is that baseball has actually kind of been there for me so far.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't really been my main focus just yet. But
no, it's the first time in quite a while that I have totally cashed in on the spring seasons. The Bruins, of course, do not make the playoffs for the first time in, I don't know, 5 or 6 years probably.
That's like 07, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, it was 07. Mm-hmm. And Stanley Cup championship, another finals appearance the last 5 years, and this year that's injuries, things didn't come together, and they missed the playoffs by a point, and then of course Chiarelli gets fired yesterday, and I have a feeling Claude's to follow. I don't know why you would fire the GM and leave him.
Well, now they're saying he may stay, and they may try into. It sounds like Neely's buddy there. I can't think of his name right now. He was a former player. He's in the front office. They're going to make him the GM, and then Neely's pretty much going to run the show. And the GM will do the Swanson. No, not Swanson. What the hell's his name? Drawing a blank. Anyway, he'll do all the heavy lifting. And then basically going to try and remake the team the way they want and basically tell Claude, look, you either coach this team the way you want it or you're going to be gone too. So it'll be interesting. But they're probably better off having missed because now they still have a small percentage of a chance for the number one pick. I mean, but they're in the lottery, so they got a shot. I don't think they would have gone very far in the playoffs. Although hockey's the one where if you get in and get hot, you never know.
Well, okay, 2012 Kings were an 8 seed, and they ran the table and won the whole thing.
But it's probably for the best. Chiarelli needed to go at the very least, so
yeah,
they need someone more aggressive.
I'm trying to think who the front office. I don't know. Now I'm puzzled. Now I'm curious as to who the guys
are.
I
can't think of his name. They were just talking about it today.
Yeah. Oh, weird. Okay.
But it's been a party up here for when Chiarelli gets shit canned.
Well, yeah, because I think that it kind of came as a surprise, but not really. He traded a lot of fast skaters away.
Well, the big issue, too, was he wasn't very aggressive at the deadlines the last few years because he kind of fell in love with all his guys. And, the big money to Chris Kelly was a bad one and a couple other guys. Don Sweeney's his name.
Oh, Don Sweeney. Big Don Sweeney fan. He was a
he's been the assistant GM for the last 5 years. So
yeah, no, I have a feeling he'll get promoted. I mean, he was a Bruin in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, so they're basically saying he'll be Neely's, Jack Tunney.
Anyway. We will draft this guy at this Tuesday in Texas.
Yes. We'll get knocked out by a chair.
So, and of course, the Lakers, I gave up on them at Halloween.
Okay, so they did have you the, read the Orlando Magic thing today?
I have not had a chance to. I heard it was very good.
Yes, excellent read. Highly recommend.
I heard it was very good. Yeah. No, the Lakers right now have the fourth most ping pong balls behind the, I think the Timberwolves have the most, then the Knicks, and then I think the Sixers have the third most. The Lakers have the fourth most. I just wanted to get somebody. I mean, they still have cap issues because of Kobe. I mean, Kobe's obviously the wild card there if he decides to retire play another year. I mean, I don't know. He's got to look within himself and see if he really has the legs to go another year, but we'll see. My NBA finals now is what I picked at the beginning of the year, and that's Warriors, Hawks. I think that's the finals right now. Golden State's gonna have a tough road, but I think they're gonna survive it and get to the finals.
West is very interesting. I mean, I don't think they'll struggle too much. New Orleans, Spurs and what's their faces? Clippers should be a good series.
Yeah, I was talking to my brother today, and I said that's not a good matchup for the Spurs. Clippers are very athletic.
Clippers have played them well all year, so.
Yeah, I think it's a bad matchup for the Spurs. I don't see that.
Memphis, Houston, Dallas, right?
Yeah, that's a decent series.
And Memphis and Portland.
I like that. I like that series a lot. I'm a big Portland guy. I like the Blazers, but I don't know if they could beat Golden State and make it to the final. And the East is kind of wide open. I mean, the Hawks are really good, but I don't know. They're a team I think that can be beaten, but I don't know who that could be. I mean, the Bulls maybe, probably not.
Maybe.
Toronto's a weak two.
No, Toronto, Washington, I don't think have the guns. I mean, I think it's. Yeah, I mean, Cavs, Hawks is probably a toss-up, and then the Bulls is the dark horse. And other than that, I mean, I just, you know, Milwaukee and Boston, those are fun stories, but they're not going to go anywhere.
No, I was talking to the Lumpy Silverback, and I told him, I said, don't get fooled by this Celtics team. I think they're good. They made a nice run late, but whoever they play, they're not going to be able to. If it is Cleveland, I think, right? They're playing the Cavs. Yeah, nobody can guard Irving on that team. So, and LeBron's LeBron. He'll do his thing.
Maybe Bradley, maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
They may steal a game.
I think they may steal a game at home. I can't see them winning the first two in Cleveland, but we'll see. Anyway, you can catch more great NBA talk on, of course, both the Extra Point and the Sports Lounge. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about a show that was in a city that doesn't have basketball. It does have hockey, though, although that team is not in the playoffs.
Hey, 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 what is going on here?
Quite a bit, Principal. For tonight, we're going to hell. I'll say it the Vince way. Hell! Is it hell in a cell?
That Vince after seven packs of Marlboro Reds?
Yes. Or hell in an over cell.
Overrated cell.
Actually,
that's probably about properly rated.
Yes.
Bad blood.
Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, exactly that. Bad blood, 2004.
This blood is bad.
The last bad blood ever.
Chris Golo, your blood is bad.
It's weird hearing all like the bumps going into replays. It's like really, really weird. Interesting show we're about to talk about because once again, I think I had an opinion of this after watching it today, and we'll talk about it. Even with this mega geeked up, super gigantic main event, I think this was another great showcase for Chris Benoit that I think people may. Because I remember at the time people thinking, he's starting to get forgotten now, not in the main event, blah, blah, blah. I didn't feel that after watching the show today.
We'll see.
But we'll see. June 13th, 2004. Live from the Nationwide Arena in, as Frankie Williams said it, Columbus, Ohio. We've been here before, so we don't need a history. I believe the last show here was the 2002 King of the Ring. I believe was in this
gem.
Book. Yeah, that gem. Yeah, so are they going to be 0-2? We'll see.
Yes.
Your attendance, yes, only 9,000.
What's this dump hole? Let's see, Nationwide Arena.
It's probably a decent amount.
Yeah. 20,000 or so for concerts, 19,500, so not even close. I mean, half.
Yeah, so not a great
The star has dulled.
Here. Yeah, maybe it's the two show thing. All right, your buy rate, 0.49. And your announcers, the voices of the Red Brand, good old J.R. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, and their table is still way back in the in section 450. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, our Sutton report.
Let me bring that up. Do you remember the tagline?
Something about Hell in a Cell.
He's back. Watch yours. I don't remember that at all.
Oh, because the poster was Edge.
Oh, right.
So okay. It said, he's back. Yeah. Watch yours.
Watch your back.
So,
I get you. Yeah. Okay.
So,
the song. Do you remember the song?
Bad song by a bad band. Something by Slither, right? Or Seether.
Seether. Sold Me by Seether from the album Disclaimer 2. Do you remember the sponsor?
Snickers.
$5 foot long.
Subway. I knew it was a food. I remember a food thing on the screen today. Subway.
Your world champion of Raw, Chris Benoit. Your intercontinental champion, Randy Orton. Your tag team champions, La Resistance, had defeated Chris Benoit and Edge, who had defeated Evolution.
Double Rez title.
Won it in Montreal on 5-5. I think they got a pretty big pop, if I remember that show correctly.
Yes, I remember that pop was crazy. Yeah.
They're all really into it. Women's champion is still Victoria. Mm-hmm. The Rock had returned briefly on the 5/17 edition of Raw, and I believe that's memorable. Is that the one that was the last? No, he has one more with the summer, right, I think?
He comes back in 05 during
I thought 04 was it. Oh, no, you're right. Yeah.
No, 05, because he comes back during the Diva Search.
I thought that was 04.
Was there a Diva Search in 04?
04, he had the thing with Eugene. That's the one this is talking
about. Yeah, that one I remember. But then he comes, I don't think he comes back again. He comes back in 05 for the during the first Diva Search. The whole pie thing, and he does pie jokes.
I thought that was 04, because later in the year they do the...
I don't remember another 04 appearance.
Yep. August 23rd, 04, from Anaheim he was on. And that's the Diva Search.
I didn't know that. I totally forgot there was an 04 Diva Search.
Well, yeah, because they're the in the Taboo Tuesday later in the year, remember?
Oh, that's right. The Halloween thing. That's right. Oh, so, that's right. Because What's-Her-Face is at WrestleMania 21. That's right. Okay.
So this is this is it for The Rock. He this was not the last one, but his last one's later in the year in August, and then he's done until 2011. He doesn't come back till.
Wow, really?
On TV, he does a couple pre-tape things. Remember, it was like a big deal. He does the, maybe he was in his trophy room. He was on like some DVD or some special. He talked.
Right. Yep.
But then his official last, it's his last official like in-ring appearance till 2011.
Right. What's the year his father gets inducted?
I thought that was when he was already back.
Was it 2000? Doesn't he remember? He gets they all get all pissed off. He does the snarky little, "Hey Mick, how are you? Good to see you." And everybody gets all like pissed off that he sounds like an asshole. I thought that was maybe 2010.
Let's see here, Hall of Fame.
I thought it was before he's announced for the as the host for 27. Maybe not.
You might be right. Let's see.
Is it at 27?
Yeah, you're right. 2008.
Okay, so the Orlando. That's right. Okay, but anyway, so two appearances in 04 and. We'll talk about the other one later, because because when we get to that point, a special new contest is unveiled later on in the year, and we'll get to that. So, but he shows up on 5/17. Okay. Other, do we have any other roster
bonuses?
Yes.
Yes. Released from the company was Brian Lawler, of course, the former Brian Christopher. He had come back to the company, only 6 matches, 1 win and 3 losses on TV. Accused of using muscle relaxers, so he was booted from the company there. One wrestling death, a Hall of Famer at the age of 94.
Classy Freddie Blassie?
Nope. He was the year before.
That was the year before. 94?
You're never going to get it.
No idea.
All right, so let's play a little Kevin Bacon. So Freddie Blassie's last appearance was with who? Do you remember? They wheeled him out and he yelled an infamous catchphrase for them. Tag team.
Oh, it was 2003.
Yeah.
Get the tables, probably, something like that. Yeah.
It was the Dudleys.
Okay.
And this guy shares a name with that tag team. James Dudley.
James Dudley.
Passed away at age 94.
So. Yep. The guy who used to run the, was it the Cap Center?
The bathroom attendant.
Yes, he passed. Oh, we can't go there. We already had one joke of that this evening.
Stuff the dead strippers in the trunk. All right, yeah. TV by the numbers. Raw
he worked
passed
with, Lou Rotella.
576 episodes of Raw, 302 for Heat, 100 TNA weekly pay per views at this point. So they've been around for a couple years. TV milestone cards. Heat 300. So Rhino defeated Val Venus. Matt Hardy defeated Rudy Cooper, and Trish Stratus beat Nydia. So it's a big card there for Heat 300. Mm-hmm. And then TNA 100 had also occurred with Jeff Jarrett winning the King of the Mountain to become the new NWA champion over. Ron Killings was the champ, Raven, AJ Styles, and Chris Harris.
Ah, one half of America's Most Wanted.
TNA Impact debuted as well around
this
time. Yep, their first one. Okay. Their debut card, Abyss defeated Shark Boy, AMW beat Dallas and Kid Cash, and AJ Styles defeated Chris Sabin, Elix Skipper, and Michael Shane. So that was... I guess Fox Sports, right? Was what they debuted on?
Yes. Yes. Did you say Shark Boy or Sharky Edwards?
All right. We had two heats, as usual. International Heat, Victoria defeated Molly Holly. Mm-hmm. Rosie and Hurricane defeated two of our friends, Arch Kincaid from Chaotic Wrestling, teaming with our buddy John Walters.
Yes.
Arch Kincaid. I called one of his matches before. Garrison Cade defeated Maven. And Rhino defeated Stevie Richards. And the Bad Blood official heat, Batista, defeated Maven. So... we'll have more from the month of June from Stephen Sutton at our next show in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's a double dipper for the month of June of 2004. Okay, let's dive in. Let's dive in.
Let's dive in.
Let's dive in. All right, let's dig in. Speaking of double dipping, JR, we have one of Guy is double dipping tonight, wrestling twice, and that is your world heavyweight champion, Mr. Chris Benoit, is wrestling twice tonight, both title matches, because our opener is for the World Tag Team Championships against the last two pairs of champions.
Mm-hmm.
Your champions, as you mentioned, JR. La Resistance. Of course, that is Sylvain Grenier. And now he's being called Robert Conway.
Robert.
I
believe that's also the cameraman's name for Scott Jeffries and Jeffrey Scott in the documentary.
That right, it was Robert. Correct. He's a good man.
I prefer Robert.
Come here, Robert. yes. Jeffrey Scott, whatever happened to him? So, La Resistance, as mentioned, won the tag straps from Chris Benoit and Edge.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned earlier. They defeated, of course, Batista and Ric Flair of Evolution. So, we've had two switches since our last, since Backlash.
Yep.
How do we get, what are some other facts and figures to get to this point, JR?
On the 531 Raw, as we mentioned, emanated from Quebec, the hometown team, La Rez, given a tag title match, the crowd surprisingly in their corner, and they won after Edge accidentally speared Benoit. The next week, Edge and Benoit traded words before Coach informed them that Eric Bischoff had forced them to face La Rez in a handicap match. Edge would interfere. Oh, Benoit had to face him in a handicap match. Edge interfered to save his partner, and Bischoff announced that Edge and Benoit would get a rematch at the pay-per-view. Eric made a second handicap match on the spot, with Edge and Benoit being forced to battle La Rez and Kane, and Kane would pin Benoit for the win. In this match here, Scott, interesting. La Rez, like we said, back as champs, a much stronger look, as we talked about. No more of the little indie-looking tights. Good heat. They sing their anthem. Edge starting to get back in the groove a little bit, but seems a little bit out of place still, I thought. Do you agree with that?
Yes. It seems like the company has, the tone of the company has really changed since he got hurt in the beginning of 03. You know, this was a much more drastic roster change post-draft than the one in 2003. So there definitely feels like both rosters are very different, and he seems to be lost in the shuffle right now.
He just feels, like, uncomfortable to me. Like, he looks uncomfortable. Maybe because we haven't been watching TV, so I don't know, maybe he was assimilating a little bit better. I just feel like these couple of pay-per-view matches, he just doesn't seem at ease yet again back of the ring. Benoit working double duty. You know, in some ways, it shows a lot of faith in him. And like you said, in some ways, though, it does feel like maybe they're minimizing him just a little bit. He's working in a tag match, and then even his main event's not the last match on the card. It definitely fits his crazy workhorse attitude, though, where he's going out there a couple times a night here in two big title matches. So, I mean, it's hard to bitch too much because he is in two title matches. It just, you know, depends how much faith you put in the tag titles. Edge and Benoit, quick tag early. Batter the champs, rather. Lots of chops. Nice high back suplex by Benoit on Robert. La Rez takes over and work over Edge's neck, which I thought was pretty good psychology. Good aggression from La Rez. Edge cuts off the comeback. And La Rez cuts off Edge's comeback. They have good heel work to block the tag attempts. Edge gets a double back suplex block. He blocks that, hits a double neck breaker, and makes a hot tag. Benoit goes to work, gets a crossface, but Conway breaks it up. Edge almost spears Benoit again by accident, but he stops short. And then Benoit hooks the crossface on Sylvain, and Edge wipes out Robert. Before Grenier can tap out, Kane comes out, beats down Benoit and Edge for the DQ. Benoit takes a beating. Good angle, I thought, to build the heat for the match later. Yes. Decent tag match. I thought it could have been better if they had some more time, and I thought they needed more teases of the tag in the heat segment. Like, they kind of just went to the tag, and I thought a better finish, that this could have actually been a pretty good match. La Rez keeps their gold, which I thought was a good move to stop kind of hot shot and get around and let them settle it down for a bit. Benoit's down and in pain. What did you think of the finish here? Because it actually surprised me rewatching it. I assumed for some reason that Benoit and Edge won it back. So then when Kane came out and they got the DQ, it kind of caught me off guard.
I was, at the time, anticipating that Edge and Benoit were going to win the belts back. But I like the whole Kane coming in, because that seems very Federation era-ish, or even like the mid-90s years kind of heel philosophy of, you know, kind of softening up your opponent for the later on in the show. I feel they hadn't done that a lot during the Attitude Era. Not that guys wrestled twice a lot during the Attitude Era, but I liked it. I thought it was a good little storyline swerve. I know I always mention this point, particularly during Raw pay-per-views, But again, we're dealing with a show where one match takes up, you know, a quarter of the card. So I think a lot of the matches got, you know, cut off a bit, although not too many. And I think they needed to, I didn't think they'd have time for heat segments on this, in this match, but it did take away from it a little bit. But, I still think at after this match that Edge was not totally in sorts yet. So I think that's why the match kind of
Well, and it's weird, too, because he's kind of in this angle with Benoit, but he's not really his challenger, but he is his friend, and they're kind of arguing. I don't know, just, he just seemed a little just lost, just a little out of place. He had the Kane feud quick, and it seemed like they were trying to make him all anti-authority and feuding with Bischoff, but it just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't have that feel to him, anti-authority. I mean, they'll make the change soon enough that they need to make, but right now he still feels like he's trying to get his feet under him. In the ring, he feels a little choppy.
Yeah, almost like they were trying to invent, and I think you've mentioned this in the last couple pay-per-views, that they were trying to invent a new Austin.
Right.
And it just, I mean, Edge is a great character and a great worker. He's no Stone Cold in that aspect.
I did like the psychology of them working the neck. I mean, that made sense.
Yes, and that gets enhanced later on in the show, too, in the other match. Too.
And the Benoit beating that he takes from Kane, I thought was pretty good, too. I mean, at least
it was a good choke slam.
And, throws him to the stairs, and that sets up the match later, at least to put a little bit more doubt to Benoit. So we go backstage. Eric Bischoff buttering up his nephew, Eugene, says he's trying to protect him. Eugene says his favorite wrestler is... And then Scott shoved him down the stairs. Bischoff says he doesn't want Eugene to suffer any major injuries in the ring, and that's why he's trying to keep him out of action. So,
by the way, a fact that I want to mention to, you know, kind of match the people on chats and in Facebook who love to argue minutia. Bischoff said that, remember when Triple H tore that muscle in the back of his leg? It wasn't the back of his leg. It was the front of his leg.
We hate minutia. Now tell me all the matches on your four-disc Jeff Jarrett DVD.
Well, there's one against AJ Styles. No. Good psychology there.
From Bischoff,
we'll get more into Eugene later. Don't want to talk about him now, but so there's your and then of course he has a match later on. We'll get into that match shortly. Our next match continues a storyline that started back in late 2003 and has evolved into different things, and continues here, and that is Chris Jericho, who has of course been feuding or has been involved with Christian since late 2003 when they were partners, and then they kind of got pissed off at each other and had a match at 20. We all know what happened there. And then had a match, a handicap match at Backlash. Well, now there's a new guy in the mix, JR. Tell us about this guy that Jericho is facing this evening.
Well, Tyson Tomko, real name Travis Tomko, signed a developmental deal in 2002, immediately assigned to OVW. After a tag team title run with his stablemate Seven, Tomko was elevated to Raw dark matches throughout 03 before making his debut on the 419 Raw.
Hi, little boy. My name's Seven. Why would you steal a WCW name?
I'm Travis Tomko. On 419, Christian defeated Chris Jericho thanks to help of an unknown assailant. Backstage, Christian introduces to Trish's new problem solver, Tyson Tomko. The next week, Jericho got some revenge when he knocked Christian out of the ring and hooked Trish in the walls until Tomko saved her. On 5-10, Jericho got more revenge when he defeated Christian in a cage match. Christian then had to hit the sidelines to rehab a back injury he had sustained in that cage match, leaving Trish under the watchful eye of Tomko. On 5-24, Tomko attacked Jericho, put him through a table with a powerbomb, attempting to put him out as well, like Christian had been. The next week, assuming Jericho was out, Tomko and Trish hosted the highlight reel and mocked the previous week's attack. Jericho showed up and attacked, but while he had Trish in the walls, Tomko kicked him down and slammed him on a steel chair. What did you think of adding Tomko into the mix here? And we said that Christian went down when he was really kind of hot.
Number one, I like Tomko because, I mean, that's kind of an old school thing, bodyguards, muscle, that kind of thing. And he wanted some, it made Trish more of a heel, that she needed somebody to protect her. And, you know, Christian, I mean, nothing against him, but, you know, Tomko was much more imposing person to be as muscle for a heel vixen like her. And I was bummed. Christian was getting red hot. I mean, you could argue he was one of the, if you take Evolution as a combined entity, He's one of the top two or three heels in the company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could. He's. I think he's on par with Kane at this moment. I mean, obviously Orton's the IC champ, but again, if you put Evolution as a unit, they're probably one number one total. So it definitely sucked for him because I think this feud was good. We were getting good matches. It was keeping Jericho kind of fresh
mm-hmm.
and in a good feud without needing to put him in any title pictures, particularly with Benoit's champion. So yeah, it sucked. It was big. It was bad for the Raw roster because they were already kind of devoid of talent, of good workers. So losing a guy is not good for the Raw roster. So yeah, that it was definitely bad. It was not good.
Trish, very hot here, by the way.
Incredibly.
Tomko powerbombed Jericho through a table during the build-up to this, and they sell that up. Tomko, good look, but green. The match spills to the floor. Tomko eats the post. Very basic power offense for him in the ring. Tomko works the back, uses a bear hug, and then he ends Jericho's comeback with a really stiff shoulder breaker in a nice spot. Tomko fights off the walls, and Jericho chops his legs. Trish hops up and runs some interference. Tomko collides with her, and Jericho hits the enziguri for the win. Nothing special. I thought Tomko worked hard. It just wasn't clicking yet for him. Jericho gets to win as his revenge tour continues on Trish and her team. What did you think of this one? Were you surprised that Jericho won at the enziguri and not the walls? Or I thought it was fine. I think they were trying to sell that he couldn't get it on his legs and he was resourceful and won another way. And what did you think of the match?
It's funny you mentioned using something else to win a match against a bigger guy because that comes into play in another match on this card that really irritates me. In this instance, nah, I mean, Jericho, look, Jericho's an exemplary worker. He can win. He could beat you in a myriad of ways. So I had no problem using another move to beat him. Was I surprised he won? Nah, not really. Tomko's a guy who, you know what I mean, you weren't pushing him for anything crazy. And if you do, you can just make that up later. So, and losing to Jericho is not a bad thing. So I didn't have a problem with him winning here. The match itself was okay. It was serviceable. It was nothing offensive. Jericho did the best he could with a green, bigger guy.
Yeah, Tom could definitely look low. I mean, I really wonder if they were planning to rush him into a spot like this when he debuted, or if Christian getting hurt kind of forced their hand to do something like this. Like, I wonder if Christian was going to have another match here with Jericho, or if they were going to do some kind of tag. Like, I'm really curious where they were headed with it.
Right.
Or if they were just going to roll the dice with Tomko and let him kind of learn on the fly. But, I mean, it's a pretty big spot just to chuck him in. And I thought Jericho, like you said, did his best to walk him through it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean it was okay. I mean it served its purpose, but it wasn't anything memorable. So, but Chris Jericho wins the match, and I don't know what happens with Jericho from here on out. His guy is hurt, or his main arch nemesis of this so far in 2004 is injured.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when. I mean, was it? I don't remember. Was it pretty much said that this back injury was really bad at the time? I don't remember.
No, I don't think it was like terribly bad, but it was definitely enough. I don't know if it was like a herniated disc. I forget exactly what it was, but I remember cringing. Doesn't Jericho... I haven't seen the match in forever. I thought he did something. Doesn't he put like on the walls on top of the cage or something crazy?
Yeah, he does something really nuts that really wrecks his back. So
then he's out till what? So. Unforgiven-ish, I think he comes back. I think it's like September Christian comes back.
Well, Unforgiven is when he... that's when him and Jericho had the ladder match. So yeah. It was definitely before... It was probably like late August.
Yeah,
that's or early that. September, so... So, I mean, obviously they had to rush Tomko now and he probably wasn't totally ready yet, but I mean, again, the match was pretty serviceable. And, so there it is. Chris Jericho wins the match, continues the feud, but, Trish, our sexy vixen, has more in her, on her plate, later this evening as well.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little backstage action here. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, Randy Orton cuts a promo, but as he's doing it, he slowly makes his way to the ring and starts bragging about the length of his IC title reign, which had been going since December. Strong promo, but his challenger for the match that was set for later comes out, and the match just starts. So, throwback to ECW, I guess, maybe?
Yeah. Yes.
Since jumping to Raw, Shelton Benjamin had been part of the coalition to battle Evolution. With a pair of wins over Triple H and a pay-per-view victory over Ric Flair, Shelton turned his attention to the IC champ and defeated him in a non-title match on 531 to earn the shot here. Mm-hmm. I like this reign. I think Orton, you know, you have the Foley stuff in there, obviously, as well. But even around that, I thought it's been a very good title reign.
Mm-hmm.
They've worked hard to continue to get him over. Shelton's strong push continues as well. feuding with Evolution with all the gold on the line. Orton's great heel presence is growing. Did you notice the confidence, even the way his interview turned into the match, just had kind of nice command of the moment? He didn't seem like he was lost in like some other times he's had.
Yes. No, he definitely, I think that this is where I definitely feel that this is the point where they've kind of given Orton a little breathing room from the rest of Evolution. Obviously, Batista's not at that point yet. He will faster than people think, but he's definitely not at that point now. But Orton has gotten some space for himself, and this promo definitely proved it.
Yeah, you can definitely you can hear the confidence a little bit more. It has a presence. The way he walks and talks, you could tell he's more confident in himself.
Mm-hmm.
So Benjamin attacks at the bell and just mauls Orton to start. There's a cool feeling match. Two young studs, the gold's on the line. It was a good spot for them. Orton gets some shots in, tries to escape, but Benjamin is aggressive. It was all over him. Mm-hmm. Orton whips him to the barricade, but Benjamin dumps him into the crowd. Shelton comes right back. It's a nice suplex from the apron into the ring, and then finally makes a mistake when he misses a Stinger splash. Flair comes out. Orton starts to work over Shelton. Shelton breaks a chin lock with an electric chair, but Orton comes back with a really nice hangman neck breaker and goes back to work on the neck with another chin lock. And this is around the time, Scott, that Orton was catching a lot of shit for his chin locks. Do you remember?
Yes.
He'd clamp on like one or two a match.
Yep.
They never bothered me, though, because he always seemed to work them. Like, he never seemed to just lay there in a chin lock. Like, he was always grinding or kicking his feet and snarling. And I mean, did he go to it maybe too often? It was a little bit of a binky for him, a little bit of a security blanket. I mean, maybe, but...
Hmm. Never heard the comparison of a binky in a wrestling wrestling
well,
analysis.
Kind of what, you know, it's kind of
very
like
impressive.
His, you know, he gets whatever he needs, a break or he needs something to go to the chin lock.
No, you're right. And the comparison is to binky. It's a something. It's like a Linus's blanket. Absolutely.
I think it was the Rick who used to really. He always had it up for and he hated him. But I think that was his big thing. He always just ripped him for that.
Well, it's no worse than. I mean, was it any worse than, you know, is it any worse than? Than Yokozuna's nerve pinches.
Is that what you really want to compare it to? when Yoko do the nerve pinch, it looked like because he was about to die from a heart attack.
Well, that's true.
I mean, Orton to me just, it seemed just to me that he wasn't a complete package yet. So mm-hmm. He almost needed to have like a dumbed down play in his playbook to, you know, it's a run up the gut. You know what I mean? All right, let me take a minute and kind of reset myself. Mm-hmm. But at least he always worked them. He always made a count, and he'd focus on the neck, and it made sense with the RKO. It wasn't like complete. It's like you just slap on an armbar that made no sense. I mean, to me, right. At least, I just remember at the time always thinking the criticism was a little heavy on the chin lock stuff when I thought there were much worse transgressions up and down the cards than Randy Orton's, you know, one too many chin lock throughout the match. I mean, here he did go to it like three times, but it just made sense. He was working the neck the whole time, and he was always aggressive while doing it. So
I think, you know what I think it is, JR? I think it varied from guy to guy. Like, if he was facing somebody who may not be as savvy in the ring, then the chin locks weren't that big a deal because you're facing a guy who really, you know, probably could have needed the break from with a chin lock being received to him. But I think this match in particular, and maybe his next pay-per-view title match, is where the criticism is because he's facing a guy that's a great worker. I mean, this match is slightly over 15 minutes. So did we need two chin locks to eat up that much time? So I think it was more of a case by... I mean, I was not as critical as the Rick was. I always thought of it more as a case-by-case basis. Depending on, like, Backlash against... Not Backlash. I'm thinking of Shelton. Foley was different. Foley, that's a match you can't really use as an example because, you know, it was a handicap or it was a hardcore match. It had weapons and stuff, so that was different.
Well, it was just more as TV. I mean, not even just as pay-per-view matches. I mean, that's what we're watching. Yeah. But it was TV every week. He would lock on chin locks all the time. And I know it was a big talking point about his repertoire and as they continued to push him along those lines. But again, it was just something I remembered when I saw him slap them on here. I remember the kerfluffle about it, but... So Orton makes a mistake here, misses a high cross body, and then it kind of devolves into a cool little slugfest where they're both kind of like on their knees and they get up and they're just trading right hands. Benjamin catches a stiff forearm, but he comes back with a flurry and gets a close near fall on a top rope clothesline. Shelton hits a T-bone, but Flair gets Orton's foot on the rope. Shelton beats up Flair and he even puts him in the figure four, and then he rolls up Orton at the same time. Shelton hits a high cross body, but Orton rolls through and gets the win to escape. I thought Shelton looked great here. He got tons of offense in. He beat up Orton, he beat up Flair, and it really took an Orton kind of roll up, flash roll up to get the pin. It was a bit sloppy, but kind of in a fun way. It was just like two young guys throwing everything at the wall and trying to see what they can do to get the win. Mm-hmm. Evolution continues to rule the roost, of course, with all the gold. But what did you think of that? Like, did you feel that same? Did you get the same sloppy feel when you were watching it? But to me, it felt, it didn't feel like they were sloppy in the way that they were missing spots. It just felt like a sloppy fight, which I like. I don't like when it's a, you know, spot fest and they're slipping and falling. But here, it felt like there were a little out of sync, but in a realistic way.
I always consider it something like controlled chaos. And I always use one of my favorite examples of a match where controlled chaos leads to a fun match was Brainbusters and Hart Foundation at SummerSlam 89. Guys running around outside the ring and like Arn and Tully and everything looked out of, but it had this controlled feeling about it that didn't make it seem like it was making the match kind of out of control and sloppy, but more building the drama and the psychology. And I think this match to a lesser extent is exactly what you said. Maybe one less chin lock wouldn't have hurt, but it doesn't kill the match for me. Shelton, great performance. I'm wondering if people thought Shelton was due the win. Maybe Orton's run should have ended here. I was fine with him winning. I was fine with him keeping the title.
Yeah,
he's
me too.
Really,
I mean,
strong. He's keeping it really strong.
Shelton's, you know, got a lot of big wins too. I mean, it would have been nice maybe to put it on him, but I thought they were building to something much bigger. And I guess we could talk about it now. We can talk about it more, I guess, next month. But just quickly, I thought they were building to him breaking, because the current holder was The Rock of the longest Intercontinental title reign. And I swore at the time that they were going to have Rock put him over at the end of the year to have him pass his reign. Because Rock held it from what? From 90. When did he win it? Late night, December 97.
December 97, he got it from
SummerSlam, right?
Till SummerSlam 98. So,
right. So I thought they were going to have Orton beat Rock at SummerSlam 04 around this time and pass his reign by beating him. I remember that very vividly, thinking that.
That would have been kind of neat. Interesting. But I think some people might have been a little disappointed because, you know, people really were into Shelton, and he got, obviously, as you mentioned in the fun facts, big wins since the draft. But I was fine with it. I liked the strong, and I loved, I didn't get one, but I loved Orton's Legend Killer Tour t-shirt. I thought it was a cool t-shirt. I enjoyed it. I liked that one. And that's another sign that you know, he was kind of becoming a star, because unlike, you know, obviously Batista wasn't going to get his own t-shirt for a while. Flair's Flair, you know, and then Hunter, obviously. But of Orton and Batista, Orton starting to branch out now, has his first own t-shirt. So that's another kind of a small, subtle hint that he was starting to, you know, branch out as a superstar, even though still in Evolution. Mm-hmm. Good match. Not great, but good. Solid. Shelton with a good effort. I thought the back and forth worked well. I don't want to say it was evolutioned out, but I had a feeling we were going to see them maybe later on, so I was kind of hoping Orton would stay on his own, but that's okay. Doesn't totally hurt the match for me. And I didn't have a problem with the roll-up or the ending or anything. So, solid match. I don't think it hurts Shelton in any way.
No.
Not at all. And Randy Orton retains the WWE Intercontinental mm-hmm. Championship.
I think Orton's actually elevated the title in a way.
Definitely.
You know, it had been kind of in a weird, funky spot since it got retired and brought back and all the stuff with Christian and Booker and RVD. And I thought Orton has really, you know, there was association with Flair and Triple H and then the Foley feud. It now feels like, it doesn't feel like Orton's in the IC level. It feels like the title now has been brought up to a higher level. And I think that helped Shelton here by losing doesn't hurt him because Orton and the belt have been so elevated in my eyes. Like, the IC title felt pretty high up and revered at this point, which is rare for it to stretch for that title. And I thought it made RVD's loss not feel as tough. I mean, Shelton's loss not feel as tough because it was almost like he was just like a step above, you know, his head was a little bit Above water, below water, however the saying goes.
Yeah. Well, above water. Yeah.
Barely.
So, okay.
Speaking of barely having any kind of breathing ability, backstage, Lita and Matt Hardy are making out. Just absurdly making out, like, yes. Just over the top, like,
yeah, like,
Cinemax,
like,
Skidamax.
So Matt Hardy can tell everybody, look who I'm banging, look who I'm with.
It was ridiculous the way they're making terrible. Out. Bischoff comes in and has Hardy escorted out of the building. He had been kind of pitting and tatting with Lita here a little bit. She is almost kind of doing the whole, She was doing a lot of the anti-authority thing, too, for some reason. But so he throws Matt out so he can't get involved in the women's title match.
And that match is a fatal four-way for the WWE Women's Championship. Your champion, of course, as we've discussed, is Victoria, who has had a fine reign as women's champion, I think. I loved her in this babyface stretch. Loved her. Your other participants, Lita, as you mentioned. Gail Kim, who?
Haven't seen her in forever.
She doesn't anything. And your girl, Delicious Trish, mm-hmm. Trish Stratus.
The... surprised no Molly. Has she been taking time off? She must have or something after she got her head shaved. Has she been back yet? I feel like it's kind of weird that she's not here.
Was she hurt?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, she had the title match at Backlash with... No, that was Lita.
Right.
I don't know. When was the last time we saw her? When she got her head shaved? Well, we saw obviously 20 when she got her head shaved, but...
She's pretty active throughout April and May.
Why do I feel she was on pay-per-view? She was at Backlash, but
yeah,
in another match.
Was, yeah.
What'd she face?
June she was at. No, she was active all through June, so it's kind of weird oversight. I mean, I guess they just wanted to give her a break from the...
Yeah, maybe.
Like
you give Gail Kim the shot here?
Yeah.
She's the only other one that...
Her and Gail attacked Victoria and Lita after her match.
After the match at Backlash. Yeah. That's what it was. Okay. The match. Go ahead.
Yeah. Not much build to it.
Your match. No, not much. Again, I think it was just, you know, to get Victoria, put all the players in one match.
Strong mix of women to fill out a four-way, even without Molly. You know, pretty decent time for the division when you look at the talent that's in there. Trish has Tomko out there with her. Victoria playing the perky face role. I know you loved her and you liked the gimmick. I didn't feel as fun. Like, you get that weird dance music. You know, she's a good champ, but I liked the crazy out of her mind Victoria better. I just wasn't a fan of it.
I liked it.
I don't know. I just thought it was crazy cool. Stuff better.
I know, but I think it was a good way. Now that Trish was a big heel and Lita was still in that kind of attitude-ish, brooding baby face. I think they kind of needed, it was nice to have somebody that was just kind of happy and she kind of shook off the crazy bitch thing and went to that. I liked it. I had no problem with it. I liked it.
Lita gets a big pop as always. Victoria gets a run early before she gets dumped out. Tomko breaks up a Lita pin and he gets thrown out by the ref. Lita hits a twist of fate for a near fall, followed by all four back in the ring battling. Gail gets a nice submission in, but Trish breaks it up. Gail then gets Trish in the Dragon Sleeper, which gets broken up as well. Gail showing off a decent arsenal here. Ugly, messy collision between Lita and Victoria. Trish steals the pin on Lita to take the title after Lita was going to pin Gail with a DDT. There's a smart move to get the belt back on Trish. She's clearly the alpha female throughout this whole thing. I thought it made a lot of sense to have her kind of be the dominant force in the division. And Victoria not getting pinned kind of lets her lose without losing and then sets up her to go back after her title. So, the match was fine. I think it was all about the decision, just getting the belt back to Trish. So, you know, she's been doing so well in the heel run. Jericho, that thing seems dead now for a while. So it seems like they could take a break. And get her back into the women's division. So I was fine with this. I like the switch.
I do too. Even though I do like Victoria a lot, I mean, it had to go to Trish. She was, like you said, she's the alpha female here. It was time for her to really... Because if you're getting out of the feud with if the Jericho-Christian stuff was starting to simmer down for a bit, you needed to give her something to keep her a heel. And being champion and, you know, dogging the baby faces is the right thing to do. So I was bummed that Victoria lost, but I'm glad she didn't get pinned. Lita hits Victoria with her finisher and then, you know, Trish runs in for the cheap, you know, heel roll up. So perfect ending too. Decent length match, just slightly under 5 minutes. Nothing crazy, but definitely needed to happen. Trish needed to get the win here. So I had no problem with who won. I was bummed that Victoria lost, but I'm glad she didn't get pinned. And
I thought Gail actually looked pretty good here. She got a decent amount of offense and showed off her arsenal. I mean, definitely been underused. She was on TV quite a bit, but we haven't seen her on pay-per-view much. So just kind of got lost in the Victoria, Molly, Trish stuff in 03 and 04.
Yeah, and you almost seem like she should have been like Jazz in like 01 into 02, where she should have come in immediately and maybe made a bigger impact.
Didn't she win the title on her first night?
Did she?
Remember she won that Battle Royal and won the title or something?
Oh, yeah. Wow, I don't even remember that. Wow.
That was 03.
Holy crap. Wow. Tells you how much she's been underutilized.
So you can't have a much bigger impact than that upon debut.
And then it just vanishes, yeah. So there you go. Trish Stratus, your new women's champion. I think this is her... I'm not going to pretend to come up with a number. Lord only knows.
Maybe third or fourth.
Yeah, third or fourth. Okay. Now we get to this. Ugh. I got a lot to say.
That's what worries me.
All right. How do we get to this match?
On 4/26, Johnny Nitro gave William Regal 2 weeks to prepare Eugene for his in-ring debut. Eugene had been a thorn in La Resistance's side, then demanded a match with him. Over the next 2 weeks, we were treated to some funny vignettes of Regal training his new protege, and on 5/10, Bischoff revealed to Regal that he wanted Eugene to lose so he'd become frustrated and quit and be out of his hair. Later that night, Regal followed Eric's wishes and attempted to trip up Eugene, but Eugene shook it off and won his debut match over Robert Conway. On 5/17, Jonathan Coachman, along with Garrison Cade, were interviewing Eugene and proceeded to verbally abuse him to the point of making Eugene cry. Just when he was about to sulk off, The Rock made a surprise appearance, helped Eugene beat Coach and Cade down, and sent them scurrying. By 5/24, Regal was really starting to show some compassion for Eugene, but the coach was still messing with them, and Regal said he would not be permitted to accompany Eugene to the ring for a match with Coach and Cade. Just when it seemed like Eugene would have to go it alone, Chris Benoit hit the ring and helped Eugene defeat his tormentors. The next week, Bischoff and Coach set Eugene up by promising an apology but delivering a beatdown from Kane. After Regal flipped out on Eric threatened to fire him and then claimed that the Eugene experiment would end later that night and put him in a match with Kane. Mm-hmm. Eric told his nephew that he made the match so Eugene could see how dangerous the business was and would leave Raw and return home. Eugene hung in there and won the match by DQ. On June 7th, Eric announced that Eugene would face Coach at the pay-per-view and booked Eugene in a match with Johnny Nitro. Because he was annoyed at Nitro's antics, Eric told him if he lost Eugene, he was fired. Eugene won the match, and Nitro was kicked to the curb. I mean, I liked the Regal-Eugene stuff. They were trying to obviously use all the faces to get Eugene over and have them show compassion. You know, it's a unique character that they had to kind of tread lightly with, and I thought they did early on. Like, I thought they really played up how, you know, he was special, but that he had watched all his favorites growing up and had learned how to emulate their moves and was kind of a savant in the ring. And I thought they kind of towed the line fairly well, and it made sense that Bischoff is such a piece of shit that he just wanted him gone. And I thought Coach was an equal piece of shit, and so it kind of made sense that he was just being a big bully to him. But that's my take on it. So I didn't mind the gimmick or the match, but I have a feeling you did, so go ahead.
This match is way too long. It doesn't need to be 7-something. Could have been shorter. Maybe put more time to the women's match. And I just can't stand the character. Never liked it. Hated it. And it has something to do
What's your reasoning? I'm just curious. I'm not trying to pin you to corner.
Because it just was annoying. I thought we were so advanced in the wrestling product that we didn't need. And I apologize for having to say it this way. We didn't need a fake retard as a character. I just thought it was stupid.
Well, you say we advanced, though. All right, so devil's advocate. I mean, is that why we're able to do it now? Because they had advanced?
I mean, it just...
Like, if you had this in the Attitude Era with Vince Russo, you know, forget it, right?
Yes.
But here, I don't know. I thought they always handled it fairly well early on. Like, I think it gets out of hand later, and they kind of missed their window to make it to mix it up, and they kind of just let it go too long. But I thought early on, it was, I don't know. I thought it was worth the roll of the dice. Like, I thought they did okay with it.
I don't know. I used to hear a lot of things about Dinsmore in OVW, and I thought,
well,
that's,
I'm not going to disagree with you there. Like, he definitely had the ability to be more, and that this character was limiting to him. The issue I have with it, and I guess we'll save it for our next Raw show in a month, but my bigger issue is where they put him.
Yeah, that really torqued me off.
I mean, it gets absurd.
Yeah.
To the level that they have him start playing a role in. But I thought here, just like in the lower mid card, you know, dickhead coach fucking with him.
Mm.
If he was just kind of like a little fanboy that had some matches, and they should have left him there. I think the big problems come in a month. But I mean, if you don't like the character, you don't like the character, it's fine. But I didn't mind it. I thought like he was really good at it. I just think it goes way too far in a couple of months.
Yes, it most certainly does. I mean, I just didn't like it. It doesn't hurt the show for me any. I mean, I still thought the show was as good as it was going to be. I don't know. I just thought we had advanced beyond needing something so, and this is a adjective that we've used a lot, both on and off air tonight, a character so absurd that for 2004, I mean, if this was 19, the Attitude Era would have been perfect for it because we all were kind of we fans, writers, wrestlers. We were all politically incorrect assholes at that point, so we would have laughed at a fake retard character. But like the Federation Era, no one would have tolerated it. And at this point, it's not intolerable. It's just, I don't know. It just seems unnecessary and unneeded. It's not what Raw needs. Raw didn't need a character like this, but. It's not intolerable. I will concede that at this stage, it doesn't wreck anything in terms of the product. I just thought it was unnecessary. But they did what I was afraid they were going to do, which is think, you know, backstage thinking, wow, she's kind of a fun character, and then shove it in where it didn't belong. Right. And we'll get more to that in the next Raw show. Eugene wins with a rock bottom, and he's executing the moves well. I mean,
oh,
you
yeah.
know,
well, no,
decent
he's
stunner.
A great wrestler. I mean, it.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. He's fine there. It's just in that character, they let him go way in over his head.
Yeah.
And get him evolved to an absurd level. Like, we'll see. I mean, this is, we'll talk about it the next one, but it's just absurd what they do with him.
Yeah. I kind of, compare it to, and I'll go further with it at Vengeance, but, I almost compare it to like heel Doink. And I'll use that. I'll save the comparison for the next show. But so Eugene gets the win. He beats Coach in 7 minutes and 39 seconds. But there was a lot of crap going on. I mean, at one point, Eugene's kind of talking to the fans while Coach runs the ropes.
There was a lot there. I mean,
there was a lot of stalling. So
he's
not,
mimicking a lot of the old school moves and style.
Yeah.
Cage shows up. He destroys Eugene's teddy bear.
Yeah. So it wasn't like a total 7 minutes of wrestling. So.
No, and then Coach hits Kid by accident. Eugene gets to rock bottom at People's Elbow.
I forgot that until I watched it today that Cade actually came out. I didn't even remember that.
Teddy bear. I mean, the gimmick was kind of over, though. He gets a pretty big pop here, and Regal celebrating him was pretty good, and then Eugene hits a stunner on Cade and Coach after the match to kind of put it to bed. But
right.
I liked the Regal part of this, like the slow kind of him starting to get a soft spot for the Kid and starts putting them over more, and they start to become friends more than just, you know, just Regal just having to take care of them and treat them like shit.
Yeah, and it gives a fan something happy because it makes Coach look like a dope. And,
yeah.
You know, it's a happy moment. So, all right, why don't we take a break? Because our last two matches take up a lot of time and have a lot of backstory. So it is, of course, Bad Blood 2004 on the mothership. We'll take a break. More after this. Because of the wonderful things he does.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net's Still Real Tells podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton. The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports. As well as the NBA Team Podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
All right, Nation, we are back talking Bad Blood 2004. We talk about PlayStation.com as well. Scott, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continued today, the 1993 Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Yokozuna's big win as we head towards WrestleMania 9. This will be up next week. A great new series launched, Scott, that I'm very excited about. PTBN's Real World Champion. So what we did was we had about seven or eight of us get into a chat room. Mm-hmm. And we went year by year from 1983 to 2014. Hmm. And we decided who the real world champion in North American wrestling was in each of those years. So we factored in work rate, we factored in drawing ability, influence, just general acceptance, mainstream, like all that.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the alpha dog in each of those years? Kind of similar to, like, I don't know, if you visit Grantland, they do the championship belt, like the best pitcher of every year, the best quarterback of every year.
Yep.
So that's really what we're aiming for. And so the first installment's up, 1983 to 1988. We're going to have, I think there's five or six of these, and they're going to be up each and every Wednesday. So be sure to check back every week as we move to 1983 right to 2014. So be sure to check that out. You can bring us your feedback on Facebook and Twitter as well. We're curious in it.
Mm-hmm.
New episode of Richard and the Mailman, looking at Better Call Saul, the first Richurance, and many other things. Wednesday's Walk Around the Web with Glenn Butler, as always, as well as Russell Sellers' New Hotness. New episode of Exile on Bad Street, Chris Zellner's podcast, had Rob Naylor on and Wes Hatch, and they discussed the rebirth of U.S. independent wrestling scene in the early 2000s. Rick Blade, Xavier, our buddy, Rocky Rebel, The Messiah, all those names they may have heard in PWI or on the internet. So check that out. It's getting rave reviews from all corners of the internet, this podcast. It's an excellent episode, so be sure to check it out, Chris and Rob and Wes. Brian Bayless kicked off his Raw Rundown series. Each and every Monday night after Raw, he'll have his recap up. We'll have that up for you by Tuesday morning. Of course, Brian's a great writer, good recapper, so well worth your time to check it out. New episode of The Extra Point, Scott, went up. You talked a little baseball. Mm-hmm. You talked a little Masters. You talked some Stanley Cup.
Yes.
TJ McClune came by. A lot of stuff going on.
Yep. Yep, good show.
New NBA team podcast as well, wrapping up the regular season, and we're going to have two installments coming this weekend for you, previewing each conference's playoff matchups. So that's Andrew and Adam. That'll be coming at you. Speaking of podcasts, we had a lot of audio for you last week. The monthly Rewind series that kicked off back in February moved through April here as Ben Morris, Greg Phillips, and Andrew Reich looked at Spring Stampede 2000. And Scott, the next one from May will be Over the Edge 98. You'll be part of that one with Ben. And
yes.
Do we know who the rest of the crew is yet?
Is it Ben? I think it's Ben, me, Glenn Butler. I don't remember the fourth person. I know at the moment it's me, Ben, and Glenn. Okay. I know that for a fact. There's one more person that we're going
to
get in.
Looking forward to that. We've got the next few ones kind of lined up. So every month we'll have a pay-per-view rewind. Ben Morris usually will be doing the leading.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a different roundtable each time. Charles Williams this week in 90s wrestling chugs along. We're through the week of April 11th. Aaron George's series on the Great Alternatives, ROH, NXT, those are up as well. New tag teams back again, episode 3 with Kelly and Marty Sleaze and the team looking at the history of tag team wrestling throughout 1985-86 WWF.
Mm.
And Scott, we will be doing it here now, of course, the greatest wrestling theme song tournament decided by PTBN votes. We are into round 2. Launches tonight at midnight. So this podcast will go up and these will go up shortly after it. So I thought we'd get a little jump. These aren't even posted yet, but we're going to go through and give our votes.
Okay.
We started with 292 songs. We had a play-in round, went down to 256. And now we're into round 2, down to 128. Yeah, 128.
Yes.
Yep. All right. We are in the Venice Beach region. It's gone up tonight at midnight. So we'll do this entire region for you right now.
Okay.
Number one seed of the region, Real American, Hulk Hogan's team, battles seed number 128, Dean Malenko's WCW theme. Obviously, I think we know where we're headed here.
Yes.
13 people voted for Ernest Miller's theme, I'm the Greatest, over Real American in the first round. Malenko barely edged out Eddie's 2005, Can You Feel the Heat, only won by 4 votes.
Wow.
All right. Number 64, Do the Bird, Coco Beware. Battles one of the 17 Rick Rude songs in this tournament, and that is number 65, Smooth Operator.
Ugh.
Tough matchup here. As much as I love Coco, I think I got to go Smooth Operator.
Yeah. Is there ever been a guy, is there a guy in history who's never had a bad theme song? I think Rick Rude may be the only one.
And they're all in this bracket, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too.
All right, song number 32, Metal, Kurt Angle's theme, battles one of my favorites, one of our favorites, number 160, Drums of the Night by Steve Backlund. That one. The one that we've heard many times on here.
Yes.
Who do you like?
I like Blackman.
Over Kurt? Come on.
Nah, all right.
Wait for it.
Shh, wait.
Here it comes. Here it comes.
Ugh.
CRZ, punching a hole in his wall, but I think come on, Kurt songs.
Yeah, no, we'll put Kurt because
plus
you
get the
guy,
Patriots legacy in there too.
Yeah, that's true. Your guy has one theme. My guy has like 9 in this tournament. So
I mean, Kurt's. I mean, nah, Blackman's great, but all right. So here's another tough one. Okay. Seed number 33, and that's Rick Rude's WWF theme, his infamous one there, versus one of my modern favorites, number the 96 seed, and that is Jack Swagger / the Real American song. Patriots. That's one of my current favorite songs. So I think I have to get, as much as Rude's song is awesome, I think I have to give the edge to Swagger.
Yeah. I do like, I like that. I like this. I like the, yeah, I like that. Yeah. It got good pops when they were.
That's one of the
anything ones. That's anything that has that regal.
Well, it's got such a heavy drum beat too.
Yeah,
that makes it really good.
I liked when Cesaro was coming down with it too when they were together. So,
all right, cool. Number 16, the Corporate Ministry, one of the best mashups in Red WWF theme history, takes on Roland, the Undertaker's theme. Actually, these two songs won by almost identical scores in the first round.
Wow, that's
a tough
one.
Corporate Ministry.
Yeah.
And this is one of the best Just that big mass of humanity coming down the aisle.
No chance. Yeah, I like that.
That's awesome. Such a good one. I mean, that's one of their best ones. It even made the anthology. Like, that's how good it is, you know?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that's going to get
back. Back before mashups were actually really a big deal, right? 98, 99. That's pretty cool.
All right, number 49, Basic Thugonomics, John Cena's original theme against Undertaker's current version of his Dead Man entrance. And that's the 80th seed. I'd probably go with Cena here.
Yeah.
I don't know. Taker's is special. I don't know.
Taker's. I mean, it's. I'm going with Taker's. Okay. Because I think it adds something so special, particularly when it is Mania time and he's facing somebody big.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I can go with that.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the 17 seed. Little Jive Soul Bro.
Oh, it doesn't matter who the other song is.
Taking on Bombshell by the Dudley Boys, of course.
Oh, there. get up, drop the bomb. I like that too. But that's when you're talking about entrance themes, as much as that's a good song, I mean, Jive Soul Bro is Jive Soul Bro, man. It's Twin Towers. It's your boy Akeem.
Yeah, to me, it's not close.
It's
Number 48 seed, whatever, Chris Benoit's song here in the time period we're talking about now, 2004, against probably quite the, I don't know how this even happened. I blame all you guys because I know I had it about as high as it gets. And that is The Brood, which is the 81st seed. And I don't know what happened when you guys were ranking these songs.
I don't know. I gave it like a 7 or an 8. I gave it a decent.
I'm pretty sure I gave it a 10. So I think you're the problem. People gave it a 7 or 8. I think The Brood wins easy here. I don't think it's even close.
Yeah, I go for The Brood here. What are they saying? Iran.
Always sounds like saying Golga.
Golga. I
thought maybe they were going to like try and like recruit him for the team or something.
Golga, the freaking suit coming up with a fucking Cartman doll.
Hey, Golga. It's like fucking Harry Potter or something with a fucking whisper.
Hey,
Golga! Golga!
Stand in the ring of fire, higher, higher, higher.
Golga, bring me an Oreo cookie when you come up to bed later.
Make sure it's double stuff.
Bring me a glass of milk, too.
Shh. Oh, God.
Hey, Golga. It sounds like it. Sounds like
it's like Lord of the Rings.
My precious
Oreo. Nice. I already think about it now.
Hey, Golga, be ready.
Golga. Okay. Now we're trying to like pinpoint the letters.
God. All right. Number 8, the Ultimate Warriors theme takes on 136 Yokozuna.
Two great songs, but how can you can't vote. You can't vote against Warrior.
I'm voting against Yokozuna just because it knocked out Psychosis, which is one of my favorite WCW themes.
I've been enjoying that WCW theme and watching the current pay-per-views.
Number 57, Mr. Perfect. Battles number 72, Somebody Call My Mama. Two
good ones, but I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, it's hard to go against. It's hard to go against this, though.
I know, but it is perfect.
And our third Rick Rude theme of the bracket, number 25 seed, Simply Ravishing, his WCW theme.
Love that song.
Which knocked off Family Man, which I thought was very fitting. Ricky Steamboat's WCW theme.
Yes.
This is a tough one for you, though, because the 153rd seed is My Time, Triple H.
Oh, son of a bitch!
Up against Simply Ravishing.
Oh. God damn it! Oh.
Come on, I'm going to give it to Rude. I don't think it's too... I mean, My Time's good.
I love it. I actually like that more than I like his current theme, but...
Yeah, I don't blame
it. Ah! Fuck. All right. Triple H has got like 1,000 themes. So long as the one, well,
so it was Rude.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yes, but I mean, if I'm only invested in one theme. In one.
Abs all in a row. I mean, how do you point out a song that has that as a lyric?
Rude. I got it, and because I enjoyed that 92-93 run, which is friggin' incredible. All right, I'll go with Rude. I'll save my Triple H chips for other songs in this tournament. So.
Chiseled abs all in a row. What a great song.
It is.
All right. You're going to get to vote for Triple H in a minute.
Okay.
Number 40, Worlds Apart, that's Sami Zayn's current NXT theme, against number 89, Regality, William Regal's WWF theme, his most famous one, the kind of heavy.
What the? Bang, bang, bang. There it is.
It is the good one, not the one that gets all kind of floofy.
Yeah, the one he had like in 2000, 2001. Yeah.
This one's much better. I like Sami Zayn's song, but I'd probably go Regal here.
I think I'll go. Yeah,
more
I got
ominous.
Go yeah, I like Regals.
All right, Scott, this is an interesting one, and here's where you get to maybe vote for Triple H, but it's against very stiff competition. So the number 9 seed, Line in the Sand, Evolution's theme, against number 120, the Mountie.
Sorry. Love the Mountie. I'm not voting against Evolution.
This is going to be a tricky one because the Mountie is very beloved.
Oh, it's a great theme.
I know. So I'm just saying you could get the Triple H backlash. You get Will on here voting 55 times. You're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's not. So, no. No, I'm not voting against Evolution. Sorry.
Okay.
Not happening. That was the first. When we were putting up the thread of nominations, that was the first one I put. So no,
I'm with you. Voting. I love the Mountie song, but Evolution's an all-timer.
Yeah.
Number 56, the Legion of Doom's WWF theme against 184, Shane McMahon.
Well, maybe it's because of my old school thinking, but I mean, I like the WWF theme, but to me, when I think of LOD, I think of Iron Man. So I'm going to go with Shane.
I was listening to LOD one today. I think you forget how good it is.
See, you're getting into my head now. Damn it!
Another heavy song, you know?
Yeah. But I love Shane's, though.
No, Shane's good, too.
Here comes the money.
It's a close one.
Here comes the money.
All right, two more. Number 24, Cult of Personality for CM Punk against 105, Walk for Rob Van Dam.
Oh!
I was a little upset with RVD. Knocked off the Stud Stable, which is, again, one of my favorite
songs. Oh, I love the Stud Stable theme, too. Yeah. I think I voted for Stud Stable, actually.
Me too. We're two of the 26.
I love Cult of Personality, though.
Yeah, you gotta go Punk. Yeah, all right, last one. Glass Shatter, Steve Austin's Disturbed theme against The Rock's Current, If You Smell song.
Oh, the Current Electrify?
Yeah.
I like that one. I never liked the Disturbed theme.
No?
Nah. Is it the... Or is it that stupid... Oh, that one?
Yeah.
I don't actually mind that one as much.
No, I like this one.
I thought it was that really... Remember that terrible one that he had?
No, it wasn't that one.
Yeah. It's like so. It's awful.
Yeah, this is the one he had when he came back from the injury.
Yeah, and used like beginning of the heel reign in 01.
Right.
All right. Yeah, I like that. That's when Disturbed had like its hand in like 5 entrance themes, I think, or something at that point in 2000, 2001. Disturbed, Drowning Pool. What were the official like bands of WWE? Drowning Pool, Disturbed,
Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit.
Dude's favorite band.
What was the other one? Who's the one that? Cool. we're gonna get a groundswell going for
Well, the Brood terribly underseeded. I'm calling it now.
Oh God. Golga, let's rest. Golga. Double stuff. Oreo.
Golga. Make sure you flush a toilet after you take a piss. Golga, put the seat down.
But it's very evident, JR. And anyway, placemanation.com, of course, your home for everything pop culture. It is evident, though, JR, that this round is when it's not like the 90s tournament. There was still a lot of, I don't want to say gimmies, but they really didn't get it didn't get tough for a little bit. Immediately now, you're getting matchups. You're going to be gnashing your teeth and biting your nails. Awesome. World class AWA Rude. I'm calling it now. I think he's going to the Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah, possible.
Yeah, I'm calling it. He was mentioned like 7 times at this year's Hall of Fame. He's never had one shitty entrance theme. Yeah, that's of course the world class AWA. Although I don't think he wasn't. Yeah,
no,
was.
It's not. I don't think it was AWA.
No, it was AWA. It was the world class. His world class theme. And
Sade
with Smooth Operator. And of course, you know, WWF theme's awesome. I tell you though. Would you consider this one's very good, but Maritella. Smooth. Maybe in some places.
Smooth Maritella.
Smooth as pudding. So,
you
anyway.
Stupid fucking asshole.
You look like Bushwhacker Butch. So, yeah. So the tournament continues.
Here he goes kicking through the shock wall. Hunched over like Butch Miller.
He laughs. He actually likes that. I don't think
Mouth Rotella.
I've never seen anybody enjoy being insulted
Bush Mouth Rotella. Can't get a word out.
I think you gotta. I think I'm gonna have to.
Might have to have a new theme so the Muppets theme might be using this one.
Mush Mouth Rotella. That might be one you got to pass off to Vince. Maybe Vince will need to sing that in the limo. Hey, Rotella, I got a song for you.
We'll see.
We'll see Vince soon. Vince will be back soon. So there you go. So the second round will start.
Boobs Rotella.
By the time you listen to this, the second round will be up on PlaySpination.com. So check it out.
Giddy up.
Tough matchups. Speaking of tough matchups, he's in this next one as we finally head back to. We finally head back to Columbus, Ohio to Bad Blood. We have a lot of fun with that tournament, JR. I think it was a great idea by all of us to come up with this theme tournament. I mean, we had a lot of fun with it. Dr. G and I on The Extra Point talked about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week on
Dr. G shit all over it like he shits out everything else on the site?
No, he voted for okay. Well, he has his favorite, but no, he votes all okay. the time. And, you know, he says he's not like the Yankees where, oh, this tournament's already done. No, it's not him. No, he enjoys this. Okay. World Heavyweight Championship on the line.
Yes, it is.
And there's, of course, as JR played, number one contender. We already saw, actually, we saw both these guys already tonight. Mm-hmm. One was in a match, one not interfered in a match. How did Kane get this title shot, JR?
He earned it like anyone earns a good title shot. That's by winning a battle royal in the 517 Raw. Over the ensuing weeks, he and Benoit had a few confrontations, and the crux of the build was whether or not Benoit could clamp Kane in the crossface. On the 6-7 Raw, Kane broke free from it and pinned Benoit with a choke slam in a six-man tag match. So a good filler feud for Benoit. Kane's still pretty over as a heel. Lots of anger, like you mentioned before, Scott, about Benoit not closing the show out. Kane's still being played up as a monster versus kind of normal people. That was, again, the feud here. How everyone loved Benoit and everyone hated him. Benoit set up as a fighting champion. He chops and tries to soften up Kane, who uses his power to block it. Benoit hits a nice enziguri while Kane was on his knees. I thought it was good commentary here, focused on if Benoit could wrestle with Kane. Kane powers through a crossface and sharpshooter attempt and uses his clubbing offense. He works over the neck to play off Benoit's surgery. Kane hits some good stiff strikes and a clothesline. Benoit goes at the leg whenever he gets any kind of opening, and he tries to ground Kane. Benoit fights with the sharpshooter and then hits six Germans, but Kane survives. Benoit follows with a headbutt, and we get a good near fall on a chokeslam from Kane. Kane tries a top rope clothesline. Benoit catches him in the crossface. Kane fights up, and then Benoit just rolls him up for the pin. I thought this was a really fun match, one of Kane's best matches. Benoit worked really hard and busted his ass, and I really like this one across the board.
I do, too. I remember when I first watched it. I mean, I've seen this match. This was the third time today, I guess. I watched it live, and then I watched it when we did the first writing of it. And I've watched it again, and it has definitely gotten better for me mm-hmm. with age. One thing, though, that you mentioned during the build, the fun fact build, that I noticed more post-match than mid-match. I know they were trying to, you know, go through the whole thing that Benoit couldn't put him in the crossface, but post-match, I think they went way overboard on it to the point where it was getting annoying, and it was almost like they were devaluing Benoit as a champion. This is where I thought they were, the only moment where I would thought that they were messing with him. The match itself is fantastic. I think it's very, very good. And Kane does a great job. Good big man spot here. Let's kind of Benoit dictate how things, you know, kind of picking spots and how the pace of the match should go. I mean, they were given a lot of time, over 18 minutes. So they really did a good job. And I think Kane held his own. You know, he's not often he wrestles matches that long. So I thought it was very good. I think that the whole not being able to put him in the crossface went way overboard. Because then after the match, Benoit walks backstage, and Todd Grisham finds him, and they stand in front of a monitor, and they just pick at all the times. Oh, great, great match, but you couldn't get him here. Oh, and you're still the champion, but you couldn't get him here. And oh, by the way, you couldn't hook it in here. It was just getting overbearing after a while.
I mean, I like that they're trying to make it like a real sports build kind of thing, but
yeah. But at the same time, earlier in the show, we talk about Jericho and Tomko and how it was pretty cool that Tomko can't be put in the wall, so Jericho had to improvise. Well, why is it that it's okay for Jericho to improvise, but when Benoit does it, it's like, oh, he can't put his real move in?
I thought it made him look resourceful. I liked it.
I liked it too, but the fact that they were needling the fact that he couldn't do it after the match was a little over the top for me. I had no problem with him winning with something else. That's fine. But I felt like the post interview with Grisham was just pushing the point too hard that he couldn't put him in the crossface, and I thought it was devaluing him a little bit. But the match itself was very good. I had no problem with it at all.
So your official stance is you're okay with the him not closing the show here?
No, I have no problem with closing the show.
No, without him not closing the show. You're okay with this title match being here and kind of being an afterthought?
Nope. No problem. I didn't think it was an afterthought. Well, I don't think it was supposed to be an afterthought until we get to this next match.
Even going in, I mean, it's not even close to being the selling point of the show.
Well, no, I don't have a problem with it because he wins, and this feud that we're going to talk about next had to end, and you can't have that be a... It's not a secondary feud. I know you may disagree. We'll get to that in a second.
You had to end it like this? You had to do this?
Well, I think you had to end the match. Yeah, I think you did.
They had to fight again?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it. I don't think they did. Comparisons to Benoit and Dan O'Brien?
No. No. But, I mean...
Gets his big mania moment. Gets that next pay-per-view kind of... A little bit overlooked.
No, because the difference is Daniel Bryan got hurt and the reign got severely curtailed. Benoit,
I think it was on the same track, but to end at the same time.
Don't think there was any other feud. Well, perhaps, but that's okay because Benoit was. Let's save that comparison till the end when we get to when this one ends. Then we'll discuss the comparison when we get through the.
I don't know. I think you're forgetting what the week-to-week was like at the time. That it did feel like he was marginalized a bit.
Well, this goes back to what was Benoit doing? He was being friends with Eugene. Now, if he didn't have that idiotic character, maybe he would have been doing something.
Yeah, but look at it. Sorry, so look at it this way. So Benoit gets tossed to Eugene. And then when it comes time... for your buddy to get the world title match, all of a sudden Eugene's up on the main event level and Benoit's back in the main events.
Well, that's wrong. I disagree with that. That shouldn't happen. Benoit should have just stayed in the main events. So he took a little detour here. I don't think that's a big deal. We're going to disagree on this next match, and that's fine. A good debate doesn't hurt. But I think the match was fine.
A good should it debate have been last. Will do you well.
It's a
we'll go back down that path again.
Oh god. It's a secondary show in June. Not a huge deal. Benoit's champ. He'll get ramped up again. It's not a big deal. It doesn't bother me.
Okay.
Because it was a good match, and he was facing a great heel. Let's talk about Kane for a quick second before we move on.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who had a job again at WrestleMania to his brother in a really hideous match, to be honest. I mean, that you and I were there. I mean, the only highlight of that whole package was Taker's intro and his return and his entrance with the Druids and Paul Bearer and everything. Other than that, the match was just trash. Getting out of that, Kane has stayed pretty strong. Even losing to Edge at Backlash, I don't think hurt him. So I think he's in a good place here anyway. And in the end, really puts on what I think was a surprisingly good match with Benoit. I think a lot of people thought, oh, Jesus, 18 minutes? Good grief. And it wasn't. It wasn't bad at all. So I think Kane deserves a little credit for that as well.
Sure. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever questioned the quality of the match.
Right. But I don't have a problem with it. In this instance, as a secondary show, I don't have a problem with it being... not last when you've got something bigger that you need to finish off. That's my opinion. I know you don't agree with the end on that, but we'll get into that now. Unless you have any last words on this match.
No, I mean, it's a good match. Like I said, I never questioned the quality of the match. Just more about the positioning of using Benoit here. That's all.
Okay, so there you go. Chris Benoit retains his World Heavyweight Championship in a great match with Kane. All right. Our main event.
And the question is, what takes longer? The match or this?
Time to play the game!
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Yes, Brad, this takes up the whole show.
You call mine Captain Criscola, I'll call yours Tennille.
Okay. Yeah. I forgot about every time we play this, because now we don't do it every show. We do it every other almost. That
blood will keep us together. Quick, blade me, Criscola.
There's going to be a lot of them in this match. That's for sure. I keep forgetting their songs after Borderline. I just remember that it ended at Borderline, and it's like three more songs. All right. The end of one of the most definitive feuds of the last 2 years ends here. How did we get here, JR?
Golga.
Yes, Golga got us here.
Hey, Golga.
I wonder if she could tell I'm home right now.
Golga. Okay. What brought us here? A lot of...
You just said it like that. Okay.
What brought us here? A lot of masturbatory booking brought us here. On 5-3, Triple H interfered in Shawn Michaels' match. Chris Benoit cost him that match. The next week, Hunter was facing off for Shelton Benjamin when Michaels charged out to attack him. After security broke up the fight, Bischoff came out and suspended Michaels for being out of line. A week later, Michaels ignored Bischoff's degree and interjected in the number one contender Battle Royal, eliminating Hunter in the process. On 5-24, the two men sparred through the show, culminating with a big brawl at the end of the program. Before the show went off the air, Bischoff came out and said he had enough of the two fighting and would face inside a Hell in a Cell. At the pay-per-view, the two would have one final brawl in the Evolution Skybox on 6-7. And I think just reading the build here, Scott, kind of illuminates the point. Like, all right, so Triple H would have probably won the number one contender Battle Royal, but only Shawn Michaels stopped him. And who cares about the title? And then the big brawl ends the program at 5-24. It's every week that was like, all right, them brawling. compare it to the build to the Benoit stuff that we talked about earlier. You know what I mean? It just feels a lot different.
I don't think that the builds didn't need to end the shows, but I still think the feud needed this final chapter. Saying that we needed a final match and where it's placed on the show are two different arguments. I definitely think that Benoit should have been the feud that in the main event. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, if it's going to end the Raw main events, why can't it end the pay-per-view? Okay, I agree with that. But what other heel is there at the moment that Benoit could face that would make it a main event match?
No, I know.
And that's their problem. It's not Benoit's fault. I think that's the booking. I think
everyone loved Benoit enough, and you set up the respect angle for him enough that even him and Kane could probably still go on last and be okay.
Perhaps.
I just don't think you have to do Hell in a Cell with these guys. That's what it boils down to. Let's talk about the match, and we'll get into the booking.
Okay.
So Bad Blood becoming the official Hell in a Cell event now. So the third one, 97, 03, 04. The Cell, like you said, feels logical in some ways. I didn't think so. Felt a little masturbatory, like I said. Triple H has his white boots on, so you know it's a big match. Basic back and forth feeling out early. Hunter bleeds early, and Michaels attacks the cut. Michaels' back gets dinged up, selling as he beats on Triple H. Not able to leverage Hunter up. Hunter drills the back and goes to work, snapping off a nice backbreaker. Hunter rams Sean into the post and Cage repeatedly. He starts using the chair to attack the back. Michaels blocks the abdominal stretch with a hip toss to the floor. Michaels blocks a pedigree and hits a big low blow. Michaels uses the stairs and Cage and pulls the match even and starts to wear down Triple H. Hunter blocks a pile driver on the stairs and backdrops Sean to the floor with a nasty sound when he did that. Hunter hits a very stiff back-to-back chair shots to Sean's back. Just nasty. Michaels gets a big blade job off a weak stair shot. You know me, I hit the stairs. Hunter grates Sean's face across the cage to really focus on the cut. Hits a spine buster for a near fall, then gets a sleeper. Sean bashes him with chair shots and reopens Triple H's gusher. Sean uses the ladder as a weapon, and Hunter's blood is a sick, just everywhere. And now, to me, this is when the match started to feel long. Both guys are completely worn out and exhausted, trading blows on their knees. Both are wobbly and slugging away. Both collapse. Then you get the pointless, which I hated. Sean's elbow off the ladder through the table. Just not needed. Gratuitous. Hunter hits a forearm low blow to block Sweet Chin Music, which I liked. Sean survives a pedigree where you get the long pin delay. And then Sean hits a flash Sweet Chin Music and another long delay, and Hunter kicks out of that. And then Hunter hits another pedigree, and neither man can move. Hunter hits a third pedigree, and you kind of get the anticlimactic finish where it's just like, all right, so this is the time he rolls over and slowly pins him. I thought the first 30 minutes was fine. The last 15 completely limped. I mean, it was unique. I give him some credit for trying to pull it off. Here's a question for you that you can answer in a minute. If it's not Triple H, would the concept have looked and felt better to some fans? Triple H gets a win to build for a future title match. I thought it was overbooked and gratuitous. I don't think it's as bad as the legend holds it out to be, but I think it's about 15 to 18 minutes too long.
I agree with that 100%. I think the problem was what ruined, I think, ultimately, as much as I guess I'm just stubborn that I think great feuds should always end with a sell, and that's just my stubbornness. But I think what ruined this feud overall, first of all, let me talk about the match, and then I'll get to the overall part.
But you're assuming a couple things with that point. That it's a great feud, which I don't know if it is anymore. And B, that it was ending, which I don't think it necessarily was, because they fight again on pay-per-view later this year. I don't know. It felt like they were saying, hey, it's Bad Blood, we could have a sell. Hey, let's put Sean and Triple H and give him 45 minutes. I don't think it felt as organic as it seemed like it did. And it made it, in a way, it almost demoralizes or degrades Benoit's Mania win, too. It's like, oh, Benoit won the title against these two guys at Mania, but it's almost like they don't give a shit about the title. The real feud is between them, and now they're going to settle it here. Like, and it's like, the two guys who lost at Mania are main eventing inside the Cell for 45 minutes when your world champion is getting a 9-minute match with Kane or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just, that's what bugs me, I think. That the two losers at the biggest show of the year, and I shouldn't say 9 minutes, it was, what, 18?
18 change.
The two losers at the biggest title match of the year get the big main event slot here at Benoit's. The winner of that big moment gets nothing.
Well, he's got the belt. And both guys had chances to beat.
It doesn't matter if he has
now,
the belt.
Now, see, I disagree here
point.
Because.
Who cares if he has the belt?
No, both guys had chances to get that belt and screwed each other over.
That's right. Shulton, so why are they in the main event in the 45-minute match?
Well, the 45-minute match part is unnecessary, but it didn't need to be that long. But I think that it needed a definitive end. The problem was their best match together was the first one, and that was SummerSlam 02. And they could never match that. And they tried so hard. And I'm sure it was more Triple H
too
than Shawn.
Too many times. Yep. They tried way too many times.
It was more Triple H than Shawn. I'll admit that. But the problem was their best match was their first match. And the only reason they fought again later in the year is because the fans voted it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have probably happened.
Oh, come on. That was...
Oh, we're really going to say that now? Nah. We'll get to that when we get
there. I don't think it was fixed, but it was skewed. I mean, of course I was going to vote for fucking Shawn Michaels. We'll talk about
it. Even though his knee was a shit show. But anyway.
Yeah, well, that's even worse. You know what I mean? Why even put him in there? You know they're going to vote for him.
I think that they needed to have a definitive end, and I think it needed to be
But it's not the end. It's not the definitive end.
Well, you would have thought, you thought that at this point they were going to have a match later in the year?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because we just talked about how they're then on Raw. You thought they were really going to keep these fucking guys apart? Unless they moved one of them to SmackDown. Now, if you wanted to tell me they had this match like at Backlash and they did the draft or something and moved one of them, that's one thing. Okay, I could buy that. But it's not the final match. I mean, they're staying on the same brand. And there's TV every week. There's pay-per-views. They got cards to fill. They're really going to stay apart?
They try.
And there was no skip to make it definitive. Like, there's nothing in place.
I think the sell... indirectly is supposed to be the stip that ends it. That's the way the sell has been booked all this time.
Has it?
Yeah. I mean, how many feuds have continued? Shawn and Taker didn't continue. Well,
sure, they fought at the Rumble.
Taker
Mick.
That
didn't end there. Not even close.
It also wasn't the highlighted match on that show either.
Triple H Cactus technically continued. Name me one where it did end. I can't think of
Triple
one.
H Brock.
You mean, then they fought Taker in 2003. Brock, yeah, Taker. I mean, you know, it's never really. I mean, Triple H Nash is probably even they fought in the Chamber. And they fought again on. Didn't they fight on TV too or something? I don't know. I just
Triple H Nash. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think. Not these guys. This isn't like the end of an era that people were clamoring for. No, we just saw it. We saw it at SummerSlam 02. We saw it at Armageddon 02. We saw it on Raw at the end of 03. We saw it at WrestleMania. We saw it at the Rumble. We've seen it on Raw.
Instead of having... Well...
We saw it at Backlash.
I blame more Shawn than Hunter. I don't know if one has anything to do with the other. The fact that Shawn needed to try to put himself in the main event at 20... Otherwise, what you could have done...
Well, it's scripted, right? I mean, he didn't really put himself in that match.
Look, back in the territory days, there was finishing...
No, but I'm kind of being serious. I mean, he didn't put himself in the match, but
No, but I mean, the fact that... But I'm sure he did... Well, yeah, I'm sure he said something.
I don't think he gives a shit. I don't think he cares. I think they over-relied on the click, on the DX, on the Triple H Shawn feud, and it wasn't going to be the end. Realistically, unless one of them was retiring or switching brands. It just wasn't. They weren't going to be able to do it. We didn't need a 45-minute wank fest inside the cell. And I'm telling you, I watched it with Andy here Friday night, and we both were like, about 30 minutes in, we're like, oh, this really isn't that bad. I don't get it. And then 15 minutes later, we're like, okay, I kind of see it.
Mm-hmm. No, it did not need to be 47 minutes. That's ridiculous.
I mean,
it's
all the laying around at the end.
Yeah, the laying around is what does it.
Oh, my God. And then, the three pedigrees.
And then they, sweet chin music, and they lie there for...
And I know what they were going for. I get it. But it's like a sprint and then just dies instead of, kind of slowly building to them being dead. It was just weird. It was a weird structure. Too long. And I don't care. I mean, it's Hunter's cross to bear that, sure, maybe it is because of him. That people look at this differently. If this is Shawn and Benoit for 45 minutes with a similar type match, probably not crapped on as much. But I mean, that's just Triple H. I mean, it comes with the territory at this point for him. But
yep.
Again, I give him credit for trying something new, going out there for 45, trying to have the epic. But it felt like a forced epic, and I think Andy said the same thing. We're watching it. It felt just like, and this happens a lot with these two guys. We talked about it at the Rumble too. I think It feels like we need to have an epic match. How do we do that? Okay, here's our take on an epic match. That's what it felt like to me.
The fact that they needed to try again after attempting it at the Rumble, yeah. They could have had a cell match for 28 minutes or 25 minutes and told just as fine a story. I'm not debating the length of the match, but I definitely think the match needed to happen.
We saw the same thing in Armageddon when they did the cage at the end. Remember we said how it just felt gratuitous at the end? We just didn't need it.
Right.
I mean, the latter thing here was like the epitome of what I hate about this feud, that they needed to do that. Mm-hmm. Sean going off a ladder through a fucking table. Like, to me, that was just like
a bunch of tables.
Really? Yeah. We need that.
I think what should have happened was they should have had either the cell. If you're not going to have the cell here, I think putting it at the Rumble would have been kind of neat and had Triple H definitively end the feud while he was champion there. And then I think you just should have had Benoit and Triple H one-on-one at 20 if you wanted to shorten this feud. And then book however you want to book it and have Kane and Benoit as the last match if you wanted to go that route.
I think you just don't do the cell at all. I don't think you need it. They've had a million fucking gimmick matches. If you really have a hard-on for having them fight one more time, I would have done a number one contender match. And say the winner gets one last title shot and the loser gets none. No more. As long as Benoit's champion. Mm-hmm. And then you have Hunter go over, and that sets up the next month, logically. And you have Sean lose. He gets no more title matches as long as Benoit's champion. You give him 25 minutes on the undercard. No sell needed. Just let them have a match like they did on that Raw. And Hunter wins, however you want to do it. That's what I would have done. And then you close with Benoit Kane. Or even do Benoit Edge face-face. They could have done that.
Mm.
Playing off their issues. They didn't have to Edge turn heel or anything. You could have him lose a hard-fought match to Benoit.
How about this guy? If you want Benoit...
All right, Gruden, go ahead.
Okay. How about this guy?
This guy right here.
This guy right here. How about Benoit Flair in the main event?
Yeah, even that would have been pretty good. I'll take that. Even
throw
Jericho in there. I mean, Benoit is a type of champion like a Brett where you can have these face-face matches if you want because you're selling it on the quality of the match, you know?
Mm.
I think there were plenty of options if you didn't feel Kane could close the show. But Benoit Flair would have been a fun main event. And you have Hunter go over Sean in the mid-card to earn his title match. And then you're not stuck with this 45-minute, you know, Griscolo wet dream and the fucking closing the show.
No, that comes in late 05. No, I don't know. I still didn't see a problem with it here, and I don't think it hurts Benoit. I just think I definitely say
I don't I think it hurts him, but it doesn't help him.
I definitely think the match is. I am not arguing with you. I'm not disputing with you that the match is too long. It didn't need to be 47 minutes. That's just that's ludicrous.
That's absurd.
You're 13 minutes shy of an Iron Man for nothing.
It's absurd.
So it is an absurd length. I agree. Word of the day, folks. Absurd. And Golga. It could have been 30 minutes or even 25. I didn't have a problem with it being in the main event, and I didn't have a problem with being in a cell.
Yeah,
and I don't think it hurt Benoit. So maybe it's this.
Everything is awesome.
Maybe things. It's not bad. Maybe this is an argument where my bias comes in, and whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, maybe.
It doesn't matter.
Don't go 45 minutes. All right,
but I'm defending it on the premise, of course, that I still think Benoit is a strong champion.
All right. All right, what did you think of this whole shebangs?
It's okay. It's not bad. No, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was fine. The Eugene stuff is crap. I thought the tag at the opener was okay. I liked Orton Shelton a lot, and I think a lot of people crap on that. And you know how I feel about the main event. Well, the match was too long, and the match is good. It's still not their best. They never. We'll just say this to conclude the feud. Even though they get an extra match at the end of the year. There was an accident because of objective voting by our fine WWE Universe fans. No, I don't know. They never could. Somebody should have told them, your match at SummerSlam 02 will never be duplicated, so don't try it. But it's the two of them. Who's going to tell them anything?
Everyone should have told them everything.
You're right, but no.
We don't need another fucking classic, a forced classic.
Yeah. What's worse? Now, before we finish this, what won?
Longevity in the bed, not in the sale, Chris Golo.
Let me ask you this. Which match, after we've watched both of them now while we're doing these shows, since we've been doing the vaults, which one of these annoys you more, this one or the one at the Rumble? Because that one annoys you too.
Shit.
Does the non-finish annoy you? Was that what it was?
Yeah, the finish annoys me at the Rumble. And I don't blame them for the Rumble because they were coming hot off that Raw match. And I could see why they thought they could duplicate it on pay-per-view. So, like, that I kind of get, you know? It's like, all right, it's like a guy playing basketball, you hit a few shots, you get hot, and you take a stupid shot. But it's like, well, I was feeling it. You know, I kind of feel like they were feeling it coming off that Raw match. And that was for the title, so it was fine, whatever. I think the match here just felt like you're usurping Benoit, you're kind of undercutting him. We've already seen you try now to do these kinds of matches a couple times. It's not working. We've seen you fight four times already or whatever, three times on pay-per-view, and it's only June. Four times they fought between January and June on pay-per-view. We just did it. I just didn't think we needed it again here.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, maybe that's the issue is, and we've talked about it a few times tonight. I think a lot of the issue was the lack of the depth of the roster.
We just gave you like four guys, though. You even said some too. Flair, Edge, Jericho. Yeah, you could even do the match you had planned for the next month here. Let Hunter get his final shot here. Then you let Benoit fucking move on. You know, maybe you give Triple H and Shawn a month off for fighting each other.
True. All those.
It just felt too soon to do it again. It's like, we just did it. We need it again for 45 minutes. Mm.
47 minutes, absolutely not. No way.
And what annoyed me, too, was like, you know, we stuck Triple H and Nash in the cell last year. So then it's like, all right, you have to have a cell match, but should it always be the title match? Like, could Benoit have been inside the cell with someone? It felt like it had to be Triple H's moment at Bad Blood inside the cell. Like, that's what it felt like more. Mm. Whoa, it's cell time. Triple H has to be the guy in it. And I'm not that much of a Triple H hater. I mean, you don't know that. I defend him often. Mm. I just felt here was one of those times that it just really was a bad look. Like, sometimes you just got to know how it's going to come across. And this was one of those times. Like, you get this beloved world champion who finally busted through the glass ceiling. And two of the guys that were looked at as guys that hold people down get the big 45-minute main event slot in the gimmick match over him. Like, it just wasn't a good look. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they were going for this classic to maybe add to like Triple H's legacy, when in reality his legacy would be held better if he didn't do this kind of stuff. Like if he did let Benoit go last and just went to the undercard for the show. Mm-hmm. You know, to me that would have helped his legacy more than some kind of fake, forced, perceived classic with Shawn in this match. Mm-hmm. You may remember more fondly in this 04 run.
Mm.
You say, oh, you know, that was cool. He stepped back and they gave Benoit a moment, let him kind of run with it. Instead, Benoit only main event shows that have Triple H in them. You know, it's like... like, yeah, Benoit's back in the main event next month, but guess who he's with, you know?
Right. He didn't get a solo match with him yet. He's owed it. No. Yeah, I mean, all viable points, and yeah, there were guys that could have made that main event better. Yeah. Not right. I just don't have a problem with a sell in the main event. I just had a problem with it being 47 minutes. That was unnecessary. But again, they went so over the top with the win with the match at SummerSlam 02, and they just couldn't. I don't know why they tried to match it. I think that's just their, again, I think, yeah, right, I think it is the click wank fest. I agree with that.
All right. Well, the show overall, so, I mean, like, I like that they tried different stuff, but I just felt like nothing ever really clicked. Like, I like how they did the tag thing and then Kane gets his heat. I liked the Jericho Tomko that they tried that. Orton Benjamin was a cool idea. Nothing really popped though. And really, Benoit Kane, for everything, ended up probably being the best match overall.
Right.
On the card. So, not their best effort.
Probably no, it's not. D-plus-ish. Yeah. Yeah.
Similar
Backlash
to
is a better show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Backlash is a better show.
Well, we'll see how SmackDown follows it up.
Well, I mean, we got a hot title feud in that brand, and they have a rematch coming up. And 2 weeks later, 2 weeks after this show, we will have our Blue Brand secondary show. So, all right, there it is. Bad Blood 04. Go on the network if you want. If you have 48 minutes to kill and you want to, it's your call. But, you know, I would watch. I would definitely one. Let's put it this way: if we're starting to do a thing where if there's one match specifically that you want to watch to maybe change your mind on it, watch Kane and Benoit again. Yeah. You're probably thinking to yourself. For those that haven't watched it in a while, you're probably thinking to yourself, "Yeah, it was 18 minutes. It was all right. You know, Benoit did his best with a slug and move." Nah, not at all. Not at all. Give Kane his props in that match because he definitely worked his butt off. So,
Golga operator,
Golga, Golga operator.
All right, so we're done for 2 weeks here. We'll be back with Great American Bash 04 in a couple weeks. Scott, next week we have Kevin, a main event. As of now, I believe Matt Taven will be joining us on the Kevin Kelly Show. We'll confirm that over the weekend.
Oh, excellent.
I'll be seeing Kevin Saturday night, the big XWA show, Cranston, Rhode Island. And Carlito will be on the card. So I don't know who else, but Kevin will be there. So we're going to hand deliver him some boneheads to enjoy.
Oh, excellent. Good.
And I'll get to chat with him for a few minutes. It's cool. Always a good time. What do we got for main event next week?
Main event, I believe the return of the ultimate heel, Jordan Duncan, will be back. And I'm working on a couple of guests, including a possible debut guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say who it is because it's not confirmed yet. But
George Mirison.
George. Speaking of gold, people look like Golga.
Anthony Perkins.
No. Did you say Kendrick Perkins?
Anthony Perkins.
Oh, Anthony. It's like Kendrick Perkins.
Mushmouth Rotella.
Mushmouth. Yeah.
Mushmouth.
No. So no, definitely not. I don't need death threats. So yeah, we got a couple surprises, but I do know that it'll be the return of the Dunk. We'll be returning to main event next week. So
he's got scoliosis.
He looks like Butch Miller,
Hunchback Rotella. All right, we're out of here. See you in 2 weeks. Thanks for joining us as always. Be sure to head over to PlaySmation.com, get involved. Get booked, and of course, vote in the greatest wrestling theme tournament as well. Be up again, like we said, midnight, and then rolling forward from there. So, for Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you later.
See ya.
Face Rotella.
Golga and the Oreos.
Everyone fucking hates him.
Golga never shows up. To us.